Federal Drive is presented by GEHA, Government Employees Health Association, proudly providing health and dental benefits to federal employees and their families. Visit GEHA.com.
The Biden administration wants agencies to add artificial intelligence staff. It expects to bring in hundreds of them by the end of the summer. Those new hires will be expected to deliver on the goals outlined in the latest executive order on AI in government. Agencies made their case directly to prospective hires at a recent AI and IT job fair. Federal News Network's Jory Heckman was there and files this report.
The Biden administration is calling for an AI talent surge across the federal government. And by the numbers, prospective hires are showing an interest in the types of jobs that agencies are advertising. New data from the White House shows agencies have seen a more than 200% increase in applications for AI and AI-enabling positions. The Biden administration says that heightened level of interest is leading to new hires. The White House reports agencies have hired over 150 AI experts and are on track to hire hundreds more by this summer. Those hires are already getting to work on writing new AI policies for the federal government and advising federal investments in this emerging technology. A recent White House report shows agencies are expected to bring on at least 500 new AI hires by the end of fiscal 2024. That, by the way, doesn't include the 2,500 AI hires that the Defense Department is looking to make this year and the more than 9,000 new hires it plans to make next year. One agency in particular is getting a lot of interest from prospective hires. The White House's U.S. Digital Service has seen a more than 2,000% increase in the number of applications it's getting for AI-related positions. Mina Shung is the director of the U.S. Digital Service. At a recent job fair, she told prospective hires that a career in government, or just a few years, is an amazing opportunity to solve some big problems.
Working in the federal government here is one of the most challenging but incredibly rewarding and fun things that I have ever done. Your expertise and skills are more important than ever here, and ensuring that we have those capabilities within the government to support all of the mission critical objectives that we have to help people at the most important times in their lives.
The U.S. Digital Service over the past 10 years has worked with about 30 agencies on hundreds of projects. Shung says USDS has about 20 projects going on right now. Those include helping veterans get access to benefits and giving households new options to file their taxes.
It is just an incredible opportunity to serve your country, but also to do work that really matters and is incredibly important for people, while also bringing your rare set of skills to an environment that desperately needs them.
Ben Buchanan is a White House special advisor for AI. He says President Joe Biden has made the federal workforce a particular focus of his recent AI executive order.
When the president signed that executive order, one of the things he asked the most about as he was going through it was its provisions about talent and making sure that we could get the people into the federal government to do this work.
That executive order launched an interagency AI talent task force. Buchanan says the task force is seeing positive results.
And we've had a tremendous amount of interest, but I also think we've already shown that we can convert that interest to people joining the federal government and, more importantly, to people getting things done.
The Department of Homeland Security is looking to replicate the U.S. Digital Service model. DHS recently stood up an AI Corps and is looking to bring on 50 AI experts who will help lead AI projects across the department and its component agencies. Christopher Kraft is DHS's Deputy Chief Technology Officer for Emerging Technology and AI. He says DHS is giving its workforce the opportunity to experiment with AI tools, including generative AI tools like ChatGPT.
DHS, I think, is really leading the way in a number of areas with artificial intelligence, with commercial generative AI. We have opened that up across our department for people to use. We've put guidance in place and training and rules of behavior. And I think that's really a great way to get people leveraging the technology, comfortable with the technology.
The department is using this technology to train employees at U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services to handle asylum cases. It's also using generative AI to cut down on the trafficking of fentanyl. Kraft says that's just the start, and with the right talent and tools, AI can transform the mission of DHS.
So it's really going to help DHS continue to evolve and deliver leading-edge artificial intelligence solutions. And this is where we need experts like many of you to help us and come join our team. An exciting opportunity to be in an organization that's really leaning forward, where we need your expertise, we need your help, and we're building something that's new and innovative.
Julie Waters is Senior Technical Advisor for Data and Analytics at FEMA. She says the agency is looking at AI tools to augment its current workforce as the agency responds to more and more disasters. Waters says that FEMA responded to over 100 disasters last year, stretching its workforce pretty thin.
And we at FEMA no longer have a disaster season. We used to kind of just have hurricane season, but now this tempo has put us in a year-long posture that's put a significant strain on our people and our resources. So to meet this challenge, we're committed to try to leverage every possible solution we have available, including AI and other emerging tech, to reduce barriers to our program delivery, to help us prepare for emerging threats, and to improve our national readiness.
Waters says FEMA is using AI to forecast the number of individuals and households registering for disaster assistance over time. That's critical to make sure FEMA has enough staffing on its call centers to support disaster survivors.
We don't need to always have that high level of staff 24/7. We have search. And how do we make sure that we're predicting the amount of people, when they need to be there, and for how long?
AI is also becoming a game changer for how FEMA is using geospatial data to assess how much damage has been done to an area following a disaster. Waters says a FEMA response team using a computer vision model has reduced the number of satellite images that employees need to review from about 1 million to just 77,000. This shortens the time to complete initial damage assessments from weeks to days.
And that type of automation, which we want to do more and more of, helped identify areas that had the worst amount of damage, prioritize our operations and where we're sending resources, and again, ultimately help survivors faster.
Other agencies are also seeing AI play a valuable role in their missions. Robin Carnahan is the administrator of the General Services Administration. She says AI could help agencies deliver public-facing benefits and services more quickly, but agencies need the right talent to get this work done.
We need your talent. We need your innovative ideas. Whether it's AI automation that simplifies repetitive tasks and processes, better design and security, or better integration with legacy systems, we need folks just like you to make sure government effectively delivers for our people.
Carnahan says prospective hires from the private sector are interested in big, complicated problems that can have an outsized impact, but she says there are plenty of those in government.
I can tell you unequivocally that if those two things appeal to you, there is not a better place to work than in government.
Jory Heckman, Federal News Network.
Check out Jory's story at federalnewsnetwork.com.
Leadership today, especially within the federal workforce, is being tested more than ever before. As the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency's Chief People Officer, Elizabeth Comestetter sees a focus on people as absolutely crucial to her leadership style. Comestetter joined Shane Canfield, WEPA CEO, to reflect on her years of experience leading in the federal human capital space.
Hello, and welcome to the Lessons in Leadership podcast. I'm your host, Shane Canfield, CEO of WEPA. Today I'm joined by Dr. Elizabeth Comestetter, Chief People Officer at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
In your current position at CISA, one of your responsibilities is ensuring a people-first culture. Explain what that is, and what's the role of leadership in creating and shaping that culture?
Yes, at CISA, really paramount to our culture is a people-first driven aspect, so that we are really looking at how do we accomplish our mission through our people. And in order to do that, we really value our people. We want them to feel empowered and supported and respected, and also that their managers care about them. So well-being is important. Psychological safety in the workplace is important, so that all voices and ideas are heard. So I like to call it our North Star. Having a people-first culture really starts with the people in order to get our incredibly difficult mission accomplished. In terms of leadership, which is a great question, I think we all know that culture is really driven by leadership and the behaviors that we allow and we reinforce in our leaders. So we really work at making sure that our leaders are bringing out the best in their people every day. So again, that they feel they can bring their voice, especially an opinion that might not go along with the majority of a group, so that we get that diverse perspective. We get those different ideas and experiences. And that's really where we find that it's important that leaders are purposefully bringing out their talent on their teams to enable our mission.
Excellent. We're going through a culture project at our work.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's been 6 months in the making, and it's going really well, but it is work.
Yes.
And it requires from the top down, so I'm also involved in that. I hear you.
Great.
Throughout your career, you've piloted many different talent management programs, including at NASA, the CIA, the FBI, just to name a few, and you have an amazing career. What have you learned, or how have you might have changed along the way in creating and leading those programs?
Yes, and I am so honored to have had a career in public service across multiple federal agencies, always in the realm of human resources and workforce performance. And I think because I study organizations and people in them, I've come to realize, particularly in the federal government, that many of our programs are really grounded in the industrial era thinking, that this is organizationally structured in a hierarchy with boxes and lines on charts, with the center being around jobs and what do we need to get this job done in terms of skills and training. And what I found is that we're really not in the industrial era anymore, where we would promote the smartest people who knew that work, and they would then tell the people on their team how to do things and oversee that work. We're now in a digital era and the information era, where work gets done collaboratively across geographic boundaries and certainly across org charts. So we like to call it networks or hierarchies, and we really need to, again, unleash people so they can find those other people who are working on similar problems or have the right ideas. And so I really like to think of our work now in the talent programs being human-centered. It's more about the user and the experience than about the rules and regulations. So although we have to have rules and regulations, certainly in human resources, is that person experiencing what they need and getting what they need for their role at that time? So not so much on the job, but on the person. So for example, we're recruiting. What's the applicant experiencing? Because if they're not having a good experience with our organization from the time we're recruiting them, they're going to go work for somebody else. Same thing with like first-time supervisors. We know they need certain training, but telling them to sit in a class for 1 week and then hope a year from now they'll remember what they learned to apply, that's not really human-centered. The human-centered is what do they need when they need it, and building modules or just-in-time training and bringing that to the people, to that user, as they need it. So that's really, I think, the most important focus of talent programs today in this era to enable the workers to be the best they can be in their roles.
Excellent. New thinking. This is always an interesting question. Has there been a time when, as a leader, that you've made a mistake? And what is that? And I think most important, what did you take away from that? What did you learn from that?
Well, I kind of chuckle because I think as leaders, we have to learn to recognize our mistakes, admit our mistakes, and that they are opportunities to learn. And so I've had to do my own self-reflection on making mistakes and when things don't turn out the way that I expected them to. Makes me think of a time when I was at the Transportation Security Administration and I was a supervisor. And I was really embroiled with my program. I was the technical leader of it. I understood it. I'd run it for years. And I was making a briefing for a decision that had to be made about this program that was very near and dear to me. And I presented the briefing to one of the very senior people in the agency. And I think there are about 20 people in the room. And I had gone through the briefing, answered all the questions, and that leader then said, okay, I'm going to go around the room and get everybody's opinion, and then everybody gets to vote, which kind of set me aback because there were people in that room that didn't have any technical knowledge about my program. She even turned to the executive assistant there, taking notes on the meeting, and said, go ahead, and I want to hear from you. And I realized, in hindsight, I had stopped listening. I had been in transmitting all of my knowledge and what I saw to be the right way, and I was not listening to different perspectives in the room because I didn't think that, I didn't value that they were bringing any kind of input to this particular decision. And it didn't go as I had hoped, and I left very disappointed and was busy blaming the senior leader and how that meeting was conducted, that she let all these people have opinions when they didn't know, in my mind, didn't know what they were talking about. And so in reflection on that, I realize, and now as I've moved into more senior leadership positions, I realize that was a mistake, that it actually is really important to listen, especially to people who have different perspectives or at a different point in the career, not just the people who know the program or the technical really well. And so that was a mistake I made, and I realized in my own sense I wasn't listening to very different opinions, and I probably should have, because I would have learned more about what was needed for this program going forward than just leaving, getting upset that it didn't go a certain way. So I've really practiced active listening. I've practiced making sure there's very different people on teams and certainly on committees or councils, that we need early careers, people new to the agency, people who haven't walked in the shoes of the technical workforce, because they're asking questions we need to hear for these programs to be successful.
Excellent. Your career in talent management means your work is very closely tied to people. And even your title, Chief People Officer, what does that mean to you to be a leader in the federal system with that focus?
Isn't that a great title? I just love the title Chief People Officer, and I think it's my dream job, really, to be focused on people and culture and the workforce strategy for the whole agency. And I'm just so excited to be at CISA at this point in time. We're only 4 years young as an agency, so we're really still creating who we're going to become as an agency and what is our culture and what kind of people and talent do we need to be sure we have to be successful. So it's very exciting for me to be in this role with a intentional focus on culture, because it's one of those things, if you leave it to chance and you kind of hope it goes the way you want it to, it probably won't. So by building programs, including leadership development programs, including any kind of training and learning and career growth and engagement programs and listening programs, that's what's really key for, I think, for our agency and particularly me in this role. I think in the federal government, we got used to doing annual survey, the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey that OPM, Office of Personnel Management, runs every year. So we would do a survey and we'd read it and we'd say, oh, this is the opinion of our people. And then we would do action plans and then we'd roll out certain activities that we would hope would increase engagement. In this era, you can't do once a year and understand what your employees' experiences are, what they need, what's working well, and what needs to improve. We need active, ongoing listening programs. So one of the things we're doing at CISA is having more pulse surveys, having more focus groups and what we call sensing sessions, expecting our leaders to have office hours where anybody can come and just talk about what's going well, what do they need, how are things going? Because we feel like it is an ongoing need to hear from our people. And I think in this role and over the years of serving, I've also realized there's never a one-size-fits-all. You know, we think certain people need certain things at certain times in their career. There's no one-size-fits-all. Neither can we also customize everything to every individual. So there's got to be a sweet spot in building really great talent programs, but also, like I said, thinking about, can we do this in modules? Can we make it a menu? Can we do it just in time as people need it so they can practice the new skill or knowledge in their role? So I think we have such great opportunity, again, with the technology that enables us to really focus on how we connect people with their work and their team to get things done in very new ways.
This is always an interesting question. Is there a figure, either from your personal life, your past, somewhere in history generally, that inspired you, your leadership style, how you view leadership?
There are many figures who have been very inspirational to me, but there is one that sticks out, and that's my mother, Paula Brownlee, who has been a very inspiring leader to me all my life. And I think because, first and foremost, she had a strong family and a strong career. And that's something I always wanted. And I saw her first as my mother, but then I also saw her as a leader in her career and in academia, which was her chosen field. But I always knew her family came first. And as I saw how she balanced different family needs with also a growing and more prominent career positions in leadership, that she had to balance that. And I think I learned from her that you can have both. You have to focus on different things through your career and through your life, but that you don't have to trade one for the other. I've been married, happily married, for 32 years, and I'm a mother of twins who are almost 24 years old. So, and I've had a great career in public service. So I think that having her as a role model has really helped me find my own courage, find my own confidence, and find my own voice in how I can prioritize the things that are most important to me so that I can actually balance both family and career.
And you're doing it well. Thank you. Having known you now for 7 or 8 years, and worked alongside you, your passion is infectious.
Thank you.
Your intelligence and the thoughtfulness with which you approach all of these issues, it's an honor for you to be here, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
I'm Shane Canfield, CEO at WEPA, and until next time, have a great day.
Find the full podcast and future episodes of Lessons in Leadership on the Federal News Network app and anywhere you enjoy your podcasts.